Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
So a piece in the New Yorker caught our attention, which really sort of states the case or makes the case that the historical legacy of the Roberts Court, the John Roberts Court, the U.S. Supreme Court right now, may just be a doctrine on money and speech and campaign finance reform that seems to be taking shape and may be crucially decided in this court session. Jeffrey Toobin joins us, staff writer for The New Yorker. He's the person who wrote that piece in The New Yorker. He's also a senior analyst for CNN. Good morning, Jeffrey.
Hi, John.
So first of all, let's play this audio from Chief Justice Roberts, who's commenting in a question during a hearing on an Arizona campaign finance reform law. He uses the words, and listen, everyone, level the playing field. It really sort of sets out the argument and the sort of historic doctrine that's taking shape here. Listen. It
says that this act was passed to, quote, level the playing field when it comes to running for office. Why isn't that clear evidence that it's unconstitutional?
So a law which levels the playing field between rich and poor candidates is on its face unconstitutional, according to Chief Justice Roberts. What's going on here?
Well, what's going on is that the court has taken a very strict new rule on any regulation of campaign finance, contributions, expenditures, and said basically regulating campaign finance is like regulating speech, in the sense that telling people what they can do with their money with regards to campaigns is like telling them you can't protest, you can't carry a picket sign. And the court has traditionally said we don't allow restrictions on speech. So the idea that money is speech is so ingrained in the Roberts Court now that I think they are heading towards a complete deregulation of all campaign finance.
And, you know, some of the dissenters, Justice Breyer is a person that you quote, and we also listen to some statements of some other justices, they tend to think that until we go the full deregulation route, we're really not going to be able to see what's on the other side here. An attempt to sort of piecemeal allow campaign finance reform is not going to really work the way the court's set up right now.
Right. What Justice Breyer was saying in this moment of despair at oral argument last week was essentially, look, we don't know the precise motivation and the precise effect of every campaign finance law. And if you're going to parse each one to the nth degree, we might as well forget the whole enterprise and simply get out of the business, force states and force the federal government to let people spend however much money they want for whatever purpose they want, and just let the free market operate. I think, you know, we're not quite there, but if you look at what the Roberts Court has written and if you look at their attitude and oral argument, that certainly seems to be where we're heading.
Well, if we do get there, and you make a fairly strong case that there are lots of signs that we are headed to a fundamentally fully deregulated zone as far as campaign financing is concerned, would that be an invitation by the court for Congress to step in and amend the Constitution? Would that be basically an ideology that then would stand and people would go, yeah, all is right with the world. The market is supposed to work here.
Well, I think if the court forces this on states and on Congress, the only option would be to amend the Constitution. And I think one of the good things about our system is that it's very, very hard to amend the Constitution. It really almost never happens. And so I think as a practical matter, the court would have the last word. As for what it would mean for our politics if all limits on campaign contributions were eliminated, if all restrictions on corporations funding campaigns were eliminated. You know, I have to say, I don't know what that would mean. You know, we've been regulating campaign contributions since 1907 in this country, I mean,
wow,
for a long time. And without those rules, you know, I think it's hard to predict, other than it would be the Wild West out there. I don't know which party would benefit in particular, but you know, chances are the Republican Party would benefit because the people with more money generally tend to favor the Republicans.
Well, in the short term, and then the Democrats would figure out how to do it, and you'd have this senator brought to you by, you know, whatever corporation or entity or committee, you know, you'd care to mention, and perhaps that would motivate some sort of political movement here. But it's interesting that this is the trend that we're headed in. Jeffrey, I've got one question to ask you that I was dying to ask you when the Walmart case came before the Supreme Court last week. You know, suddenly you've got the biggest gender discrimination lawsuit in front of the Roberts Court, a historical, you know, milestone, three women on that court. Any sense of the dynamics of the court as you observed what was going on there or read the transcripts?
Well, I was actually in the courtroom when the case was argued, and, you know, one of the striking things, I mean, I've been going to Supreme Court arguments since the 80s, and, you know, the justices, the court, the experience of being in the courtroom is just very different now. I mean, with three women on the court, particularly with Justice Kagan and Justice Sotomayor, they sit by seniority, so they are on the outside of either side of the bench, both of them very aggressive participants in oral argument. I mean, the court just looks different. But when it comes to the Supreme Court, what matters is five votes. And the three women and Justice Breyer are mostly in the minority in hotly contested constitutional issues. So the fact that they seem a little more sympathetic to the women plaintiffs is really of not that great significance because, as Justice Brennan used to say, the most important rule around the Supreme Court is five. You need five votes to do anything. Well, and the liberals, except when they can recruit Anthony Kennedy, they don't have five votes most of the time.
Before we go, you know, your famous source, Sandra Day O'Connor, for your great book on the Supreme Court, she was a swing vote. She, in some sense, had more clout in a time when there were fewer women.
She certainly did. And Anthony Kennedy's got all the clout right
now.
Wow.
An interesting changing of the guard, a set of dynamics that we're going to have to watch as the Roberts Court outlines its historical legacy in this term. Jeffrey Toobin, thanks so much.
Good talk to you, John.
Jeffrey Toobin, staff writer for The New Yorker, senior analyst for CNN, talking about the Roberts Court.
You know, Jeffrey Toobin is a smart guy. He's used to kind of handling the kind of detailed, coded language of the court, right?
Don't
so you should have asked
Jeff.
Him while he was here to help out the FBI. You know.
Oh, the desperate FBI looking for our...
You call them the desperate FBI. I call the interactive FBI. You can go to our website, thetakeaway.org. We have a real-life cold case mystery for you. The FBI wants your help on solving a code that
Check
was found
out.
On a murder victim. Check it out at thetakeaway.org.
Go to the internet.
I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
Interactive FBI.